Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, January 20th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll find out about making speedy teapots with guest Andy Engstrom. We'll learn about the upcoming NAMI Basics class with Crystal Borland, Bonnie Chaney, and Dove Gartenberg. We'll showcase Mentoring Month with matches from Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and members of Intergalactic Nemesis will be here to preview tonight's show. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Obama will deliver the State of the Union tonight. Obama has previewed his plans during recent trips across the country. One of the plans is to make high-speed broadband more accessible. Obama says he'll take executive action that will lead to the highest-speed internet being available in rural areas. During a recent speech in Iowa, he said the action would direct the Federal Communications Commission and other government agencies to do everything they can to expand access in rural America.
I'm directing federal agencies to get rid of unnecessary regulations that slow the expansion of broadband or limit competition. The Department of Commerce, they're going to work to offer support and technical assistance to communities that want to follow your lead and set up their own networks. USDA, the Department of Agriculture, is announcing new loan opportunities for rural providers.
Obama says rural communities have the right to have access to affordable high-speed internet, which he says has become a necessity to compete in a global economy. Tribal leaders and Native organizations advocate for increased access on tribal lands and Native communities. According to the FCC, access to broadband in Indian country is minimal compared to the rest of the nation. The Red Lake Nation in Minnesota will explore medical marijuana and industrial hemp production for economic development. According to the tribe, the council approved a feasibility study during a recent meeting. The tribe's economic development and legal departments will conduct the study on the issue and report back to the tribal council at an unspecified time. The issue is expected to be discussed during the chairman's community meetings next month. The issue was raised during a January Tribal Council meeting, which reportedly included both favorable and cautionary discussions. Red Lake cited the federal government's recent memo that it would not prosecute tribes growing and selling marijuana on tribal lands, even in states where the drug is illegal. A musher with Yupik roots won the Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race over the weekend in Alaska. Pete Kaiser of Bethel crossed the finish line with 9 dogs after a grueling race on the frozen Kuskokwim River. KYUK's Ben Matheson reports.
Kaiser and his team overcame a 7-minute deficit over the final 50 miles to win.
Kind of crazy. Kind of like a dream come true, but don't really know what to say.
Kaiser began mushing as a kid in Bethel. He grew up watching the Kuskokwim 300, and among those cheering Kaiser at the finish were his parents, who also live in Bethel. He hugged his girlfriend, Bethany, who met him with their 2-year-old son, Ari. Defending champion Roan Boozer led nearly the entire race until Kaiser passed him around Akiak. Kaiser had been steadily gaining on Boozer for the latter two-thirds of the race. Any hope that Boozer may have had to regain the lead was lost when he took a wrong turn into Church Slough about 12 miles from the finish. After a conservative start, Kaiser and Jeff King systematically chipped away at Boozer's lead.
This team is so locked into a speed right now that they just, whether they're fresh or tired, they pretty much get into that speed and that's where they stay.
The last local musher to win the K300 title was Bethel's Myron Anksman in 1986.
It's a real community event, and taken a long time for that to come around, and it's cool it's finally happened.
From the YK Delta, Mike Williams Jr. came in 11th place, Richie Deal 13th, and Mike Williams Sr. 17th. Kaiser is the first musher to win the trifecta of the K300, Bogus Creek 150, and Akiak Dash. His team this year includes many 3-year-olds with a year of racing under their belts. This year's purse was the richest ever, totaling over $123,000. Kaiser earns $25,000 for his first place performance. For National Native News, I'm Ben Matheson in Bethel, Alaska.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Are you an experienced journalist who can lead radio producers and reporters in best practices and bring Native voices to a wide audience? Kawanak Broadcast Corporation seeks an executive producer, program manager. Full description at nativenews.net.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 20th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. And now in the studio with me is multidisciplinary artist Andy Engstrom. Welcome, Andy.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. We were just talking a little bit. You know, when I first met you, you were creating the rock opera Volitar.
That's right, which the last album came out in 2006, actually. It's been a while.
Yeah, and now you're making ceramics, among other things.
Yes, I am. I've been having a lot of fun down at the ceramics studio at the Canvas downtown between 2nd and 3rd on Seward Street.
You had a show not long ago, had some remarkable pieces in it. Can you tell us a little bit about how those came about?
Well, last April, yeah, I had a show at the Canvas for the month of April of this last year. And that came about, it was all teapots. That's kind of it's just the one thing that I like to make, and as far as ceramics goes, because of the different shapes the components that make up a teapot, the body, the lid, the spout, the handle. Between those four elements, you can come up with a variety of massively different shapes and designs. So that came about after taking Brandon Howard's teapot class the December before this last. And so what happened was the Canvas had noticed I was making a bunch of teapots back there, and they had an opening in their gallery for the month of April. They said, well, if you can get these teapots going and you have enough for an exhibition, then we can go ahead and get you in for April. So that put me under a lot of stress to try to figure out how to make these teapots really fast.
Sure.
So what's coming about is I'm teaching starting next Tuesday night at 7 or from 5:30 to 8:30. February 27th for 4 weeks is a class called Speedy Teapots, and it's basically evolved out of this technique of creating teapots very fast. I can give you some of the technical stuff if you'd like to hear,
yeah,
Scott.
Yeah, please do.
Okay.
And I love it, too, because it's sort of the power of the deadline, and this whole method came about getting ready for your show.
Well, there's a couple. The one thing that really transformed the pots into not only being created a lot faster, but also created shapes that you couldn't get under the normal drawing process. Normally what you would do is you would throw a body of a teapot, the lid, the spout perhaps, on the wheel, and you would set that aside for a few days, cover it up with plastic, and get it to a point where it's called leather hard or leather dry. And from there, you can go ahead and trim it into the shape that you want with trimming tools on the wheel. But I didn't have time to wait, and there wasn't enough space on the counters anyway to be able to have all this clay that was going to be drying. So I saw that there was a heat gun, and I decided to go ahead and experiment with the heat gun. And what ended up happening was I transformed the way I put the pots together, because I was able to put a teapot together in a four-hour session from start to finish. It's dry, you know. It's almost completely dry at that point by using the heat gun. I can literally, and this is what I'm going to be teaching in the class, is throwing a body and actually drying it right there on the spot to the point where you can go ahead and trim the pot into the shape you want. Likewise, do the lid and fit the lid onto the body and do the spout, have all the components come together all at the same time, and actually be able to produce a teapot within one or possibly two sessions.
Wow. You know, and I saw your show, and I've seen images of your pots as well. They're gorgeous aesthetically. Are these functional teapots as well?
I try to make them functional. The most important thing as far as functionality, I think, is the way the spout is going to pour. And that's really important. So as long as you've got the spout in the right place, which usually needs to be just above the body, the top of the body, the pot will be fairly functional. One of the fun things, though, is to make a handle, and some of them can be very delicate. And under a load of hot water, perhaps, they're pretty solid, though, when they come out of the firing kiln. But some of the handles I've made are very, very delicate and very thin. So it kind of worries me a little bit. They're more, I think they're more kind of like artistic, something more of a centerpiece than actual something people would use. But
okay. How does being a ceramic artist compare to your work in music? How do you approach that as an artist, and how does it treat you?
I think it kind of feels the same way. If you've never done work on the wheel, it's very, basically, everything in your life that's stressful just disappears because you've got a new focus, and you have to focus on what you're doing absolutely 100%. So in the same way, when you're writing music or playing music or perhaps doing sports activities where there's an element of risk and you have to be there absolutely, it's the same sort of thing. If you've experienced that, then you're really going to like pottery, because it takes all of those stresses away in life and gives you just a moment to focus on what you're doing. And in that moment of focus, beautiful things happen.
Great answer. And how about technically approaching music and, let's say, playing the guitar versus learning the skills to throw a pot like these? How would you compare those?
I think, like in music, you're going to learn what they would call licks, certain patterns, certain things that you, patterns that you repeat. And I think pottery is the same way, in that if you focus on each step along the way, you're going to basically be doing these steps in a repetitive pattern every time you make a pot, even though the pot could end up being completely different from the last one, which is a lot of fun. But music is a little bit more, if you're playing a part that needs to be a very specific part, well, that takes kind of a discipline to be able to play that part exactly, precisely, where if you go into making a teapot and you just want to see what happens.
Improvise?
That's what I like to do, is just to see what happens. And you can kind of let the pot make itself, basically. And just, in fact, a lot of the times I'll just close my eyes and bring something up. Or when I'm pulling a handle, I'll close my eyes. And because your eyes kind of deceive you anyway as far as the pot goes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And you're going to be teaching about how to do this on Tuesdays beginning January 27th. At the Canvas, so for 4 weeks, from 5:30 to 8:30. Andy, what kind of student is this class designed for?
Well, I would recommend highly some wheel throwing skills. If you can throw, if you've had experience and you're fairly confident on the wheel, this class is definitely something you'd want to consider. If you've never thrown before and this is new to you, you should check out... the Canvas has a couple beginning wheel throwing classes as well that you can take to kind of get going first. And that would be, so this is more of a kind of like maybe intermediate to advanced.
Okay. And what will the class look like? Do you envision, week one, is this something that people should take all 4 weeks in a row, or can they jump in on different weeks?
Oh, it's definitely a four-week class. Cost is, I think, it's $175, the tools and all of the equipment, the firings, all that's included in that, and the clay as well. And you can come in as much as you want in the open studio times within that four-week period to be able to do other projects too, if you'd like to. So that's all included in the cost. But the class is going to be run like we're going to go ahead and jump right in and start immediately from day one trying to produce a teapot as fast as we can using the techniques that I'm going to share. And so hopefully it could very well be that a person walks away with 2-3 teapots out of a four-week class. And if they came in on open studio time, they could definitely do more if they wanted.
Oh, it sounds like a great opportunity. Again, this is January 27th through February 17th. You can get more information at the Canvas or canvasarts.org. Andy Engstrom, anything else you'd like to add?
Let's see. Well, I encourage you to come. There's only 6 spots, and I know there's a few spots taken, so it's kind of a first-come, first-serve. If you'd like to take this class, starts next week, next Tuesday, and go ahead and give the Canvas a call right now. If you've got the time and you'd like to do this, let's go ahead and fill up that class. There's only 6 spots again, so I hope to see you there.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 20 minutes after the hour here on January 20th, 2015. And now I have a crew from NAMI in the studio with me, Mr. Dove Gartenberg. Welcome, Dove.
Nice to be here.
Nice to have you. And Crystal Borland. Thanks
Hi.
For coming in. And also Bonnie Cheney. Welcome.
Hi.
All right, so let's get an update on NAMI. What's going on, Dove?
Well, we have a new initiative starting next week on Tuesday. It's for families that have children and adolescents that are experiencing early onset mental illness that might come out as emotional or behavioral difficulties, pre-diagnosed or diagnosed. And like our family-to-family program, it's a free course that is to help families provide resources for families that are going through this type of experience with their children and adolescents. And we have actually a trained teacher here, Bonnie Cheney, who went through the training, can tell you some more things about it.
That would be great, Bonnie. And I'm also hoping you can tell us what are some symptoms that might describe a person that would find this class useful. Or characteristics. Maybe symptoms is not the right word.
Yeah, right. Because the class is geared towards the parents, guardian, caregiver of children or teens that are suffering from mental illness, whether that be depression or the whole gamut of mood disorders. It could be schizophrenia. It could be bipolar.
Anxiety disorders.
Right, anxiety disorders. So... but it's for the parent or caregiver because as a parent, when your child starts experiencing some of the symptoms related to depression, say they're not getting out of bed, they're mm-hmm. not eating, you don't know what to do. So this course is designed to help you identify some of the resources available in town, help you deal with the school system if you're having problems there dealing with the school system. We talk about the biology of mood disorders and mental illnesses. You know, it's not the parent's fault. It's not the caregiver's fault. That's one of our big messages as well. So it's for the family members that are struggling with dealing with a child or adolescent suffering from a mental illness.
Okay, and this class, tell us about when and where it's going to be.
It's going to take place at the Juno Family Birth Center. We're actually going to have two sessions. The first session, there are six classes in each session. The first session is going to run Tuesday and Thursday evenings, 5:30 to 8 p.m., beginning January 27th. And the last session will be February 12th. And then subsequent to that, we will start a session that runs once a week, on Tuesdays beginning February 17th, and they both run 5:30 to 8. And we will have, at the first session, we will be providing child care vouchers. And at the second session, we will have child care vouchers and on-site child care.
Okay. It's really the same class but taught in two different formats. So if it doesn't work for you to go twice a week, you can take the once-a-week course over 6 weeks.
Okay. Let's see. Maybe we can get back to that class in a minute. But, Dove, you have somebody to introduce, maybe.
Yes, I am happy to introduce the new executive director effective March 1st, or actually February 15th.
Yes.
Crystal Borland, who is taking charge of NAMI. This is a professional for NAMI Juno, and I am stepping down. And what we are very, very happy to have Crystal step up and lead us and lead NAMI Juno, which provides so many important services and needs for people living with mental illness in our community.
All right. Well, welcome, Crystal.
Thank you so much. Very excited about this opportunity.
Yeah. What kind of background do you come from?
Yeah, I have a communications background, and when I moved here to Juno a few years ago, I actually got involved with NAMI Juno as a volunteer. I contacted Dove saying I wanted to get involved. You know, like many of us, I've had a lot of close friends and family members, loved ones in my past that have been living with mental health challenges, and I just see the importance of, you know, the community awareness and involvement. So Yeah, and last year, more recently, I was the Affordable Care Act navigator in town, so I was covering Southeast Alaska, and NAMI Juneau was nice enough to host me.
Okay. And speaking of NAMI, you have some other events coming up. You want to tell us about those?
We do. We have our Inside Passages program coming up. We have monthly forums on mental health and wellness. And our next one is February 10th, and it's with Chief Bryce Johnson. We're going to be talking about law enforcement and mental illness. So he's joining us from the police department. And these programs take place every month on Tuesdays, 5:15 to 6:45 at the Bartlett Administrative Building. And they are great programs for the community because they range on so many various topics. And we are providing continuing education credits for providers. So any social workers and providers out there, they will receive credits for attending.
Let me just say a moment why this is an important topic. Is as people who have loved ones with mental illness, especially severe mental illness, know, when a loved one has a mental health crisis, often the first people you call are the police.
Mm-hmm.
And our Chief Johnson is really has wonderful understanding of this issue and is really working to get his officers trained to understand how to help those who are having a mental health crisis, a psychotic break or something like that, and they're encountering them in the street or encountering them in people's homes, and to be effective in helping those individuals. It's a very, as people follow the news know, this can be something that can be a disastrous encounter if you have an untrained officer or you know a person who's really sick going through a difficult time. So this is we're going to hear more of what he's doing and what the police department does in these situations, and just in general, see what the type of work that's going on there on mental health.
Okay, Crystal, will you remind us when and where that talk is?
Yeah, that's Tuesday, February 10th. They start at 5:15, and that's at the Bartlett Hospital Administrative Building, so in their boardroom, which is on the second floor. And so that always takes place the second Tuesday of the month
right. Through
May.
And you can see all the topics on our website, along with the information about the NAMI Basics class.
Easy to find by Googling NAMI Juneau, I've found.
Very easy. We come up right away.
And just getting back to that class for a second, Bonnie, what's it look like when you get there at 5:30? How does the class proceed?
Well, this is our first class offered. So, but the thought being that there'll be some snacks for you to have and kind of settle in, and you'll be provided a notebook with materials for the first class, and it's a lecture-style class for a large part of it where the teachers will basically just be talking to you, and the first class is about this isn't your fault, basically. That's what we talk about in the first class. And you'll be given a list of additional resources if you want to do that and, you know, work through some of those. And there'll be time for discussion. So the classes are meant to educate the parent. It's not necessarily a therapy session. But there is a therapeutic value in being able to talk to other people that are going through what you're going through. It's a huge benefit to these classes. And all the classes are taught by individuals who have been through this themselves. So all of us have had children that experienced a mental illness, mood disorder, anxiety disorder while they were children or teens. And I would also like to add that the child may not, you don't need to have a formal diagnosis. You could just be seeing some of these symptoms. And this class will help you kind of sort through that as well.
Okay, and will you remind us once again the times and location of that class?
So the class is taking place at the Juneau Family Birth Center. It begins at 5:30, ends at 8, Tuesday and Thursday evenings, starting January 27th.
It's free, but you should pre-register. We can't really we're not set up to take walk-ins.
Okay. All right. Anything else we want to cover?
Well, we're really excited about this NAMI Basics because we think it will make a difference. And on my personal experience, I also have a child whose bipolar symptoms started showing at 11. And we didn't know what was going on, and they were and they grew in severity. And at the early stages, actually, we didn't really discover NAMI until much later. We lived in another community, and I wish this had been there early on, because it would have made a huge difference. It wouldn't cure them, but it would help all of us to have found the early interventions to reduce the impacts. And I just really urge people who are in this situation or know someone in this situation to let them know, because these early intervention is the key to the treatment of mental illness. And this is really, we want to thank those who helped provided the funds, the trust, the Alaska Mental Health Trust and Wells Fargo Foundation for providing funds so we could train peer educators to do this and make a difference and save a life and save lives. So we hope people will let people know about it. It's a very special thing to have in the community.
And Dove Gartenberg, thank you for your service at NAMI.
Thank you very much. It's a great organization. Yeah.
Crystal, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I thank Dove for mentoring me in this position, and to the board and all the volunteers. I'm really excited to just continue the momentum that he's had in this community. So.
All right, Crystal Borland, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bonnie Chaney, anything else you want to add?
I would just like to encourage people to explore the NAMI Juneau website for additional information, and also explore the NAMI Basics class and see if it might be a good fit for them.
All right. Thanks again.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. As birds go, there seems to be nothing typical about the American woodcock. It's technically a sandpiper, but has a plump, round body, a comically long, straight bill, and it lives on the ground in the forests. Probably never seen a beach or mudflat. A woodcock's eyes are large and set high and far back on its head, so situated that it likely has panoramic vision both above and behind to detect potential predators. And it needs to be watchful because it spends much of its time with its long bill poked into the soil in search of earthworms. The woodcock likely can't see the tip of its bill, but it doesn't really need to. The bill tip is fully loaded with diverse sensory receptors. As evolution pushed the woodcock's large eyes farther back in the skull, something had to give anatomically. So, a woodcock's ear openings are now set under the eyes instead of behind, as in most birds. And its cerebellum, the part of the brain that handles muscular control, is no longer where it is in most birds, at the rear of the skull. It's ended up under the rest of the brain, just above the spinal column. Adaptation to its environment has essentially turned the woodcock's brain upside down. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
We play king of the mountain, out on the end. The world comes charging up the hill, and we were women and men. Now there's so much that time and memory fade away. We got our own rules to ride. Chances we gotta take, or each that's side by side, each one fighting for the other, and we sit until we die. We'll always be blood brothers. Now the hardness of this world slowly grinds your dreams away, making a fool's joke out of the promises we made. What once seemed black and white turns to so many shades of gray. We lose ourselves in what to do,
stuff to do and bills to pay. And it's a ride, ride, ride. And there ain't much cover. No one running by your side. My blood brother.
So let's talk about it. So the issue is to get the products sold in the United States, you get FDA, USDA, and EPA approval, but then you get the...
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's real estate, home, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles on the unique lifestyle of Southeast, available online at seakliving.com.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD in Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are over 36 causes based in the Juneau-Douglas area alone, including KTOO Public Radio. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon. It's about 38 minutes after the hour here on Tuesday, January 20th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. And now, as part of National Mentoring Month, we have folks from Big Brothers and Big Sisters in the studio. Renee Lurie, welcome, Renee.
Well, thank you.
And Lena Gilbertson of Big Brothers, Big Sisters. Welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah. So Renee is the mom of two littles.
Right.
Mia and Reed. Okay. And Lena, you are the recruitment and development coordinator, or one of them over there at Big Brothers and Big Sisters, right?
That's correct.
Could you start us off telling us a little bit about National Mentoring Month?
Sure. So since Big Brothers, Big Sisters is a mentoring organization, National Mentoring Month is kind of a cool opportunity for us to celebrate mentoring and, you know, the positive effects of mentoring. So it's really a good time to kind of, you know, think about the mentors you've had in your life and what they've done for you. Maybe even think about passing that on by becoming a mentor. We're always looking for Big Brothers and Big Sisters, just folks to volunteer a little bit of their time to be mentors. Basically just the time to sort of think about the powerful effect it can have in kids' lives.
Sure, and right now you have about 40 littles waiting for mentors, is that right?
We do. We tend to have around that number in general. You know, once we get some kids matched up, we'll get new kids that come and want mentors. So, yeah, most of them are boys, so we especially need big brothers.
Okay. And Renee, you're the mother of two littles, of Mia and Reed. Can you tell us a little bit about how Big Brothers and Big Sisters has affected your family?
Sure. Mia was in fourth grade when I saw a need for her to have someone extra in her life. Big Brothers, Big Sisters provided that opportunity for her to have someone come into the school and spend about an hour a week with her. And from that relationship grew the opportunity for her to move into a community big with that same big. And she really treasured that time that she spent with Danny. I think her brother saw how much fun she was having and said, hey, I kind of like one of those. So he went through the program. He actually was matched up about 2 years ago with a community big, and they are a great match. I've had nothing but great things happen with my kids and their bigs, and just time away from home for them with someone who, I mean, I don't share a relationship with them, so it's not me that's doing these things. It's not my best friend that's taking them out. It's their very own person, you know, to have that opportunity to spend time with.
That's an interesting perspective. And is Reed's big name Rob?
Yeah, Rob.
So what are some examples of things that Rob and Reed do together?
Well, those two were kind of a great match. Rob and Reed like to do outdoor things. Rob, he's a pretty cool guy. He drives a Jeep. He has a dog. They like to hike. They like to ski. They like to bowl. Just, you know, all those fun things that, you know, little boys like to do and hang out with. I mean, really, really, honestly, Rob's a pretty cool guy in Reed's eyes, so...
Okay.
Have a good time.
Lena, can you explain for us maybe some characteristics that you see in effective bigs? You know, thinking of our listeners right now, what kind of person can make a good big?
Yeah, so I would honestly say anybody. Anybody that has the time and is willing to give, you know, a couple of hours, a couple of times a month, or, for example, in the school programs, just an hour a week. But, yeah, just someone who's willing to be consistent and someone who obviously enjoys spending time with kids. But we have kids from all walks of life who have all different kinds of interests, so we can always find a kid to match you up with, no matter what you're interested in doing.
And if somebody wants to become a big, what's that process like? Is it difficult?
No, I would say it's very easy. So basically, get in touch with us. We can talk about the different kinds of programs we have available. The first step is to come in and do an interview with us, just to get to know you and kind of find out what you want to get out of the program, what you're interested in. You know, it involves background checks, reference checks, but that's all up to us. So, yeah, and then we'll try to, like I said, match you up with a kid we think you would get along with.
And where is Big Brothers, Big Sisters located?
We're right downtown. We're on Seward Street, 110 Seward Street, right across the street from the Rookery.
And what's a good contact number and website?
It's 586-3350, and the website is bbbsak.org.
Okay. Renee, so you are the mom of two littles, Reed and Mia.
Right.
Tell us, I guess Mia needs a big, right?
She does.
Because her big moved out of town?
Mia was matched up with a big who was a freshman in college, and Danny's moved on. She's left town, much to Mia's sorrow, and so Mia is going through the process right now to get rematched with a big, which I think is pretty phenomenal for a 14-year-old to want to continue. That just goes to how great a program it is.
And will you describe for us a little bit about Mia, some of her interests, in case somebody's listening?
And would like to be her big.
Yeah.
Mia is gregarious. She's very friendly. She's very outgoing. She enjoys taking on new challenges with a slight bit of caution, but she's pretty much willing to do anything. She and Danny like to bowl. They both my kids love the zip line. You know, Mia's a skier, and she's an avid softball player, so anyone who could fit that bill would certainly have a great time with her, I think.
Okay. Lena, will you give us once more the number and website?
Sure. It's 586-3350-BBBSAK.org.
All right. Lena or Renee, is there anything else that you would like to add?
I would just add that, like I said, I think anyone can be a big. And the great thing about Big Brothers Big Sisters is we are there to support you along the way. So even once we've done the whole enrollment process and you're matched with the little, we check in every month with the parent and the little and the big. We give ideas. Like Renee mentioned, we do things like zip line. Like, we organize these activities for our matches. So we try to make it as easy as possible. And so you're not in it alone.
All right. Lena Gilbertson and Renee Laurie, thank you for your time today.
Sure, thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 20th of January, 2015. 1937, on this date, Franklin D. Roosevelt became the first president to take the oath of office on the 20th of January. Inauguration Day had been March the 4th. It was FDR's second inaugural. In his speech, he said, "The test of our progress is not whether we add more to the abundance of those who have much, it is whether we provide enough for those who have too little." 1985, on this day, Lamarcus Thompson patented the first Coney Island roller coaster. It was called the Gravity Switchback Railway. It cost a nickel to ride, and it drew huge crowds. 600 feet of track, you coasted from a tower to another tower, and then switched to a return track. It reached speeds as high as 6 miles per hour. Last summer, Coney Island brought out its latest roller coaster, the Thunderbolt. 90-degree drop, more than 2,200 feet of track, reaching speeds up to 55 miles per hour. It was on this day, 1900, that James Joyce, at the age of 18, presented a lecture called Drama and Life to the Literary and Historical Society of Dublin, a lecture in which he dismissed Shakespeare as passé and praised Henrik Ibsen instead. The professors were not pleased, but there were rounds of applause from the back benches of the room. And it's the birthday of the novelist Susan Vreeland, born Racine, Wisconsin, 1946, taught high school English in San Diego for 30 years. She had done a little bit of writing, but she didn't embark on her writing career full bore until after she was diagnosed with lymphoma, 1996. During her recovery, she couldn't do much but look at books. She looked at a book of paintings of Vermeer, decided to write a book about him. He had only turned out 30-some paintings, so she imagined that he had painted one more called Girl in Hyacinth Blue, and that was the name of her novel and became a bestseller in 1999. Susan Vreeland's most recent novel, Lisette's List, came out last year. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, Walking Home from Oak Head. There is something about the snow-laden sky in winter in the late afternoon that brings to the heart elation and the lovely meaninglessness of time. Whenever I get home, whenever, somebody loves me there. Meanwhile, I stand in the same dark peace as any pine tree, or wander on slowly like the still, unhurried wind waiting as for a gift for the snow to begin, which it does, at first casually, then irrepressibly. Wherever else I live, in music, in words, in the fires of the heart, I abide just as deeply in this nameless, indivisible place, this world, which is falling apart now, which is white and wild, which is faithful beyond all our expressions of faith, our deepest prayers. Don't worry, sooner or later, I'll be home, red-cheeked from the roused wind. I'll stand in the doorway, stamping my boots and slapping my hands, my shoulders covered with stars. Mary Oliver's poem, Walking Home from Oak Head, from her collection Thirst, published by Beacon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem-solving through online games, Lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Generator Theater Company presents A Lifetime to Master by Mary Ellefson, playing January 14th to 25th at McPheeters Hall. Carved from interviews with nearly 60 community members, A Lifetime to Master is an attempt to better understand the complicated issue of homelessness here in Juneau. Tickets for A Lifetime to Master are available online at generatortheater.org, at the Jack, and at Hearthside Books. This message brought to you by Generator Theater Company.
And it's about 9 minutes till here on Tuesday, January 20th, 2015. You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon. Scott Burton, your host, and now in the studio is Mr. Chris Gibson, voice actor, integral part of Intergalactic Nemesis live action graphic novel radio play extraordinaire tonight.
Nicely done.
Thank you. Tonight at the Juneau Douglas High School. Welcome to Juneau, Chris.
What an extreme honor and pleasure it is to be here. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, it's great to have you, and we don't always hear the honor and pleasure part when we have weather like this in the middle of winter.
We were so terrified. You know, a lot of us are Texans born and bred, and the prospect of the Alaska winter was quite frightening. So this has been actually amazing. I think when we got here, it was actually colder in Austin.
Okay, so you are a voice actor. How many characters do you play in tonight's production?
I think I'll probably clock in around 10 or 11 characters. Certainly 6 or 7 major characters, and then certain like little cameos there, here and there.
And how many times do you die tonight?
At least 6, I'm pretty sure, yeah. Or at least apparently die at least 6 times.
And, okay, in addition to my description, how would you describe your production?
Well, it's always a challenge to sort of explain what this project is. There's nothing else out there like it. It takes elements of comic books, film, music, theater, and blends them all together. It's a kind of a sensory overload. You've got all of the sound effects created live on stage. You've got 1,250 individually hand-drawn comic book slides projected on the screen behind us. 3 voice actors doing over 30 different characters in the show tonight. And then a piano player who will literally improvise the score. Every night he plays it, it's different based on the audience's participation and the actor's interpretation. And so, and then we have our sound engineer who sort of mixes it all together and creates an aural soundscape that is just unbelievable. We put the sound, equipment through its paces, that's for sure.
So one of my first thoughts in watching a couple of the videos was like Orson Welles' War of the Worlds mm-hmm. meets Prairie Home Companion, mm-hmm. and then with all these graphic novel elements and art behind you.
Yeah, throw in some Star Wars and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and you kind of got it. Yeah, that's about it.
Well, I have a sample here. You want to take a quick listen?
Absolutely.
Any sign of our rendezvous, kid? I can't see a thing in this blizzard.
I think I see a sign up ahead. This is it.
All right, kid. Let's go in.
Mom, watch out!
Attila! Silence, you cur! These are my friends here! Then back to hell with you, you mangy beast! Miss Sloan, Mr. Mendez, my humblest apologies, please. Enter. Please. This way. We can talk privately over here.
Okay, Vlad. Give me the skinny on this pelt smuggling ring.
I am sorry, Miss Sloan. But I am afraid your story may be at a... How do you say? Dead end.
Your letters said you knew the smuggling routes. That you'd help me find them. Don't tell me I came all this way for nothing.
What you're saying is true. But the smugglers no longer use these routes. Something has scared them away. I have heard many stories. Terrible monsters. Horrible odors. Like the very brimstone pits of hell.
Oh, give me a break.
As long as men have lived in these hills, there have been such tales. Werewolves, vampires, goblins. This time is different. This time is real. And then, there is this.
It looks like some kind of map.
Central Hive. The rest isn't some kind of code.
I discovered it when I came across his body in the snow. His skin had been badly burned. As if by acid. Someone wishes this to remain sick.
Vlad? Mr. Vladimir, are you all right? I think you're getting a note.
All right, Chris, or should I say Vladimir?
Sure.
What
yeah.
did we just see?
Well, that's the opening scene, portion of the opening scene. Like a film, you'll have this sort of opening teaser scene, and then we have a credit roll where the piano player improvises an overture of the show. And so that's the introduction of Molly Sloan, who's the heroine of the show, and Timmy Mendez, her intrepid assistant. Vladimir, as you can see, doesn't last very long. It's one of my first deaths. but it is an adventure story, and that's just sort of the exposition.
And some really beautiful graphic art up on the screen.
Yeah, Tim Doyle is the artist for this book, and he's an incredibly talented graphic artist and designer out of Austin, Texas. And he created the original comic book that we then incorporated in with the radio play.
Okay, so this is tonight at the Juno Douglas High School. It's at 7 p.m.
Yep.
And how many folks are with you on this trip, Chris?
There's eight of us touring. We are fortunate enough to be touring with Ray Colgan, who's actually one of the original creators of the show. He also drives us around and works the merch table. And then we've got three voice actors, a piano player, a Foley artist, and then our sound engineer and company manager.
Exciting. Tickets are at the Jack. You can probably get them at the door there tonight at 7 p.m. Intergalactic Nemesis, Chris Gibson, thank you for coming in today.
It's been my pleasure.
Have fun tonight.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, we'll talk with Douglas Johnson about his Wednesday JWAC presentation on faith-based diplomacy. Mary Ellefson and Tristan Knutson-Lombardo will be here to talk about the upcoming Lynn Canal running camp. And we'll talk with Jeff Reclow and Matt Lillard about Eagle Crest, that Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. The weather tomorrow, rain heavy at times, lows around 39. Wednesday, rain heavy at times, highs around 43. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.